Brilliant. Right, if we have any more latecomers, I'll let them in. But welcome, everybody, to Stamp Connects. I am Hattie. I am tour producer at Little Angel Theatre, and I have put today's panel discussion together. For those of us who are joining us for the first time at Stamp Connects, Stamp is a network of over 50 organisations who work together to take practical collective action to improve the ways in which artists are supported by organisations and valued in society more widely. Stamp Connects Online is the biggest event we run every year. It's normally held in person at Shoreditch Town Hall, but this is the first time that we're hosting the event online. All sessions are captioned. To activate closed captions, please click on the closed caption button at the bottom of your screen, or you can find it by clicking on the three dots at the bottom of your screen. Then click view closed captions. You can also view a full transcript of the event by clicking on the top left-hand corner, and this will open a new window. We are going to begin with a panel discussion with our lovely panellists, who we will meet in a moment, and then we will have a Q&A. Please use the chat function to post your questions, and then the chair will ask these questions to the panel directly. And if you all keep yourselves on mute throughout the session, that'd be brilliant. If you have any problem with tech or Zoom, then I'm on hand to help out. You can write a direct message to me in the chat, and then I'll be able to help you. We're going to record the session with a view to sharing the audio file on the Stamp website afterwards. If you have any concerns about this, then message me privately in the chat and we can sort that out. So without further ado, welcome to our first panel discussion on marketing and audience development, how to embrace both. And I will now hand over to our chair, Rory.
Thank you, Hattie, and thank you, Stamp Connects, for having me. Hi, everyone. I'm really pleased to be here. I really hope you find the next hour useful. We've got a really great panel. I'll ask them to introduce themselves in a minute. But first, to let you know a bit about me. My name is Rory Newton-Dunn. I'm a marketing and creative strategist based in London. Currently, I'm the PR and marketing manager for Create Jobs, which is a leading employability program. We support young people from underrepresented groups, and we help them kickstart their careers across the creative, cultural, arts, digital, and tech sector. Before that, I led the marketing for the Barbican's audience development schemes, Young Barbican and Beyond Barbican. Young Barbican was for 14 to 25 year olds to access their culture and creativity. And Beyond Barbican hosted large-scale arts and culture festivals inside and outside of the centre. First, I'd like to hand over to Daisy to tell us a little bit about you. And then, Daisy, if you can just pass it on to the next person, that would be great. So, over to you, Daisy.
Ooh, I get to pick who I pass it to as well. hello, I'm Daisy. I'm an independent theatre, cabaret and events producer and fundraiser. I primarily work with queer, trans and disabled artists and specialise in experimental and socially engaged work that often also has an activism strand to it. And therefore, I spend quite a lot of time working very closely with those audiences and building those audience relationships from a grassroots level. I'm very excited to be here as well. It's not often I get to talk marketing and audience development, so it's quite a fun bit of my different strands of work. And I'm going to pass over to Emma.
Hello, everyone. I'm Emma Blackman. I am an independent producer as well. I opened up my own production company back in... What are years nowadays? I think 3 years. Time has lost all meaning. And it was mainly to promote and celebrate female creatives in terms of getting crews from behind a scene being female led and also giving a stage to female voices. For 5 years, I was a producer and programmer for Theatre Delhi, and I ran their old library building, which was based in Camberwell, which was a really exciting project because we were in the middle of an area that was highly diverse in terms of communities that were living there, but also that didn't have a performing arts centre in the middle of the park, which was very much related to fine arts and not performing arts. So that was indeed coming into a space that had no audience development. It was literally a building, and then building up those connections and building up those relations throughout the 4 years that we were working there, which was very exciting. And now at some point I will be taking a few tours over the UK, and that will be again working on audience development in places that I might have not even visited myself in my life. So exciting times. I'm going to pass over to Edda.
Hiya, I'm Edda. I'm Head of Marketing Communications at Shoreditch Town Hall. We're an independent cultural live events and community space in East London. And we develop, commission and present a year-round programme of theatre, music, dance, circus, talks and more. Plus we have learning, engagement and community activities happening as well. I'm also originally from Shoreditch, so it's nice to come back and work in a venue in Shoreditch as well. Prior to Shoreditch Town Hall, which I actually just recently started working at in October last year, I was at Stratford Circus Arts Centre in Newham, and I've also worked at Soho Theatre as well before that.
Amazing. Well, thanks, everyone. Thanks for introducing yourselves. So, yeah, let's kick off with the panel. And I thought it would be useful if we start kind of looking at what are the differences between marketing and audience development, because sometimes these things can get confused, they can get mixed up. And I think it's important if we kind of look at them as distinct individual things. So, yeah, who wants to kick us off thinking about the key differences between marketing and audience development there?
I'm happy to start, but very much interested in like starting and then rejoining the conversation about it. The first thing that I wrote here in my notes was a performance is not just for Christmas, which I think is sometimes how marketing can appear to be, because it's very much product. So with the marketing, you are hoping to sell the product. And I think this was the biggest difference for me as I tried to like sit down and analyze what things I've done maybe instinctively. But with audience development, it was come to the first because you want to join us for the rest of the ride. It becomes this kind of ongoing relationship. Whilst if I was putting up Dickens, I might only have people that enjoy literal adaptations and aren't really interested about a cabaret that's coming 2 months later. So for me, it was very much in terms of a cup of coffee is going to get a person in who's going to be the word of mouth, you know, starting that kind of ripple of a river, as opposed to marketing. Sometimes you'll put up an ad and you don't really know who's going to see it and who's going to come. So I think it's much more personalised, and the way that you want to create your audience as a producer with the audience development aspect.
Yeah, I love that performance, just not here for Christmas. That's really great. And I think, yeah, sometimes there can be that much more campaign-led thing of marketing, which just means that there is that rolling movement. Edda, maybe you can talk from your perspective on that.
I would say I would agree. I think with the audience development, I think a lot of elements go into audience development, especially from like a venue perspective. I think the programme, kind of the educational community parts of a venue, the commissioning a venue does all kind of goes into the audience development. And it's more of a long-term thing of like continuing to work with the audiences in your community, the audiences who come to your venue, and new audiences you want to bring and then retain as part of your venue. And marketing is more kind of the activity that kind of that you do in order to kind of get the word out, as Emma said, about kind of like a particular event, a particular show, and bring kind of a group of audiences, so not just the audience that you want to develop, but also lots of different audiences who you want to bring in to watch a particular show. So kind of it's a bit more segmented, I would say, in that way.
And yeah, I think with marketing as well, you can plan as much activity as you want and you can be as targeted and specialised in that. But actually, that reaction and that community that you're reaching is sometimes there's a bit of a barrier between marketing and that audience. And I think that's also where audience development can kind of really come in. Daisy, is there something you'd like to contribute on the audience development marketing side of things?
No, I'm just thinking it over because I was like, I feel like most of the artists I work with rely most heavily on audience development over marketing. But I think there's sometimes ways to pair the two of them together. I was just thinking about like how so often with a lot of the queer work that I produce, even our marketing materials will often be like a form of audience development because we'll purposely flaunt the rules of like theatre marketing or like theatre imagery to make it a like clearly queer event, like there's been drawn on like influences from like music, pop culture, fashion, as opposed to your standard like shiny fit poster. And I think those are sometimes the ways that you can still continue to build a relationship with your audience even within your marketing material. And I think for my artists, that's sort of like quite imperative because often they're not in like a mainstream space. They haven't got a huge budget necessarily. They need to like show who they are and build that relationship with their audience very quickly through quite clear messaging. So, I was just sort of reflecting on that as well. But I think certainly that building a personal relationship with an audience is something that the artists I work with like rely on quite heavily, and like probably do it quite subliminally because they're making work about themselves quite a lot. They're making work about what's important to them, and so by putting their like personal opinions out into the world, it's also about adding to discussion and discourse, but it is also a means of building an audience.
Yeah, and I think that personal relationship is going to be really important because I think in audience development there's a trust building, there's that relationship building, which is really important, especially with new audiences. I was going to ask this question later, but I feel like it's kind of relevant to what you were saying, Daisy, around, you know, if we've looked at marketing and audience development as two different things, but there is a relationship between them, how can we embed those two things together? So, you know, how can marketing and audience development work together in a way that's actually, you know, supporting both of those like aims and goals, and they can be united in that? Emma, did you want to speak on that?
Yeah, I think it's also to do with this question. So from what you said, Dave, it was talking about when you spoke about the flyers and how you're already developing your audiences from that, from what their first kind of meet with the show. It's always so marketing is sometimes very kind of corporate, kind of we put in 150 quid, we want to see back insert amount here, whilst with audience development it's much harder to put those kind of very clear cut figures. But for me it's always when that makes the money, the audience development, or when you're able to cover your costs or even make a bit of profit to make more shows, that is the sweet spot for me. That is like taking, I think there's so much more literature about marketing from even non-performing arts worlds, like marketing is marketing is marketing. There's lots of theories, there's lots of templates, there's lots of everything. If you can take that wealth of knowledge and use those kind of corporative guidelines to feed into your work of audience development, I think that it would be a wonderful way to embed it, that it becomes more because again, what I said before was that these things have come instinctively to me. And you know what? If there was actually a method in the madness, if there was actually structure that was going by to make sure that goes, oh, actually, that works really well. I should do that one again. That would be really helpful for me, that I don't need to invent the wheel each time afresh.
Is that sort of, you know, because marketing is like this cross-industry, you know, well-trodden path in a way. There's a process and there's an understanding. Is this, Emma, are you sort of saying that it would be so helpful if there was more of a process with audience development and more of a shared understanding of how, of what works and what doesn't?
Yes, and I think you can't ignore that audience development takes more time, will sometimes take more resources, because sometimes you're put in a lot of hours into establishing a relationship with a certain venue, community centre, and sometimes, or school, and sometimes it just won't work. And then you just have to go, okay, that didn't work. I'm going to go to something new. And it's much, I think, you know, theatre, especially at the moment, we're not swimming in pools of pound notes. And I think people will have to make decisions of where the effort and the time and the money is going. But it's been extremely inspiring to see the companies and the producers and the venues that have said, we're going to take a good look at how much we've reached out to the communities around us and ensure that that's embedded in our work.
Yeah.
Knowing that you're most probably going to see less return for your money.
Yeah, I think that XY.
In the immediate kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, you were saying about that. There's the ROI on marketing is kind of always the bottom line in some ways. Like, you just need to know. And I can, you know, with a marketing campaign, you can kind of know if I put in, if X plus Y equals Z because it was before, it will most likely be that again, which might not be the case so much for audience development. Yeah, it's much more personal relationship building, like you were saying before, Daisy. And is there anything on, you know, marketing campaigns that you've worked around, those processes that Emma was talking about, which you've seen maybe could inform audience development programs?
I think at the moment we have a audio project happening called A Curse of the Crackles, which is a really fun audio show for 7 to 11 year olds, and it's really exciting. And kind of one of the things that we really wanted to do for that project is very much making sure that it goes out to as many children and young people as possible. So we just decided, actually, we're just going to offer, you know, local schools just free tickets for this. That was quite key in the development of the show as well. So from the get-go, it wasn't about kind of, you know, selling tickets to it. It was very much about, this is something that we want to work on, that just goes out to all the young people in Hackney schools, in Newham schools, in Tower Hamlet schools. It's kind of, it then just goes hand in hand, really, of like creating the show and then trying to develop that audience. But then the marketing, I think it's what you said, Daisy, of like, you know, as an artist, you know who your audience is, and you know what you're creating specifically for your audience, so you know best what they want. And it is one of those things that just will take ages and ages, and to cultivate that kind of relationship and to cultivate that that engagement list. You know, with Curse of the Crackles, we want children to access it, we've offered local schools headphone splitters. So to listen to the show, because it's an audience show, you need headphones to listen to it to get the kind of the 3D sound effect and the binaural effect. And actually, one thing that we realized was maybe schools may not have the equipment in order to listen to this. So one of the things that we are trying to do is say, listen, if you want to come and listen to this, we will send you headphone splitters. So lots of kids can listen to it all at the same time. You know, it's just one of those ways that, yeah, trying to keep that audience engagement in that way. But yeah, it's just about, yeah, knowing your audience, really. Yeah.
Is there anything you want to add to that, Daisy? Because
I guess the only thing that I was, you know, thinking about, like, something that I do if someone is, you know, an unknown artist, but I feel like they know their audience and they have something to say to them, is investing in like really early PR, like just, and I know PR is a very different thing, but I think PR build comes into like audience development really strongly, especially with anyone who has like more to say than like I'm doing an entertaining show. So that is something that has worked for me in the past with an artist who maybe is less established, but we've got a really long period of time until we're thinking about doing our like big run or whatever. That has really helped to build them an audience online, on like social media, and just like gather a following that then later when they see them, you know, actually putting something on, that's your return because they're invested in this person's like story, journey, you know, personal narrative. And then actually much later they've got something to sell them. Then the people are probably, because they've been invested in their journey for so long, they're more likely to come along or come on down.
Yeah. No, that, yeah, I think, as we said, understanding the audience, that personal connection is always really key. That project that you mentioned, Ezra, sounds amazing, the audio project. And I think it's amazing that you've looked at actually what barriers the school children faced and actually realising that they didn't have the equipment, and actually it's, if you're putting the art out there, it's your responsibility to support that access. And you know, free tickets is one thing, but actually giving them the equipment is another. And obviously that's one project which is, you know, maybe you wouldn't have done, or you would have done it in a different way prior to COVID. And I think it'd be interesting to look at what, how COVID has impacted, you know, audience development, and you know, that reliance on digital perhaps, that we've seen happen over the last 12 months, and what you, what might be the lasting effects from COVID that we see influence audience development marketing going forward. Now, Edda, you've had that project. Is there anything else that you've seen that you've sort of incorporated that work into?
One thing that we have been doing is we kind of decided, you know, we don't really need to like print any flyers or anything like that. I know that sounds quite like simple, but actually it's not, you know, we just don't really find that it's necessary at the moment to do something like that, because ordinarily if we were printing flyers, we'd be kind of using them to exit flyer at other performances. But obviously as sometimes, you know, as at the moment there isn't other performances to exit flyer at, there just isn't really a need to do that. We did want to kind of still experiment with, again, I'm using the word experiment because it's just, at the moment, it really is just like a learning process of like what is going to work and what isn't going to work. We still kind of went ahead and did some posters. I did sort of want to use, want to put QR codes. This is something, again, that was new. So we put some QR codes on those posters to make it easier for people to kind of head straight to our website if they want to buy tickets. I would say one lasting thing I would say is just less print, which, again, you know, it's great for the environment as well. Just focusing on a lot more digital stuff as well, finding kind of different ways to get the word out digitally, and trying to contact people kind of in a bit more personal way as well. So with Curse of the Crackles, we've been making sure to kind of get in touch with those groups and those audiences who we may not have normally been in touch with when it comes to shows. And I think at Shoreditch Town Hall as well, children's program isn't something that we would normally do. While we've had children's performances in the past, it's still kind of like a group that we've not actively programmed for or created performances for. It's been interesting, and it's been quite cool to see like how people have engaged with it and have responded to it. Yeah,
I think that experimenting that you talked about has been like so key for the last 12 months. And Daisy, you've we've spoken before about how that's always been a kind of a part of what audience development is about, is experimenting, trying new things. Is there anything that you've found in the last 12 months that's been particularly impactful?
I mean, I guess the thing with COVID and like bringing us to the digital space, bringing us to the like non, you know, sat next to each other space, is like in terms of like queer artists, trans artists, disabled artists, like any artist usually from any marginalized background, they've already existed in those spaces for so long. Like they've already been doing the work in those spaces for a really long time. And so I think when COVID happened, like we were quite quick to just like adapt and like go, okay, well now I'm going to do cabaret on Instagram, or like, now I'm going to do like a series of Q&As on a live. Like this is already part of my practice, I just now need to probably like monetize it a bit more. I guess that's been the like journey for a lot of people in that space, is like, okay, how do I earn a living off this now that everyone wants to, who hasn't already been in this space before? Now suddenly all these things that I think personally for like anyone who has access needs in any way, they've been campaigning for this sort of work for so long, and suddenly when a global pandemic happens, it could happen overnight. So as we've spoken about before, Rory, like I think these COVID has just brought more people to the space for these artists where they've already been doing that for so long, but obviously also it's also increased the competition a little bit.
I think there's also that kind of element that Edda was talking about the hyperlocality. So you're talking about coming from Shoreditch, now working in Shoreditch, and you enjoy like basically coming back to your own playground and developing your audiences there. And I produced Popolet's Press Play during the pandemic, and they are based in Bristol. And we released 3 audio plays and 2 filmed projects. And then there was also, they wanted to do an R&D, and we started to work on just expanding their roots a bit more in Bristol. So what we offered was an audio experience in partnership. So I created a partnership with Womankind Bristol, which is a charity that works with women who've experienced abuse. And they have a system of befriending, where you've got a befriender and a befriendee. And we offered them audio experience to listen to together. This was whilst lockdown was still very high, so they both had to like speak to each other from their homes to experience it. But we also created a partnership with a local Bristol chocolatier, so we got chocolate sent over to both of the participants to eat the chocolates whilst they were listening to the audio plays. And it's quite amazing, because now Popolet are still in contact not only with the organisation, but some of the women that were really touched by the experience are like, please add me to the newsletter. I'd love to know what you're doing next. And I think that kind of connection, you know, there's a lot to be said about having more time to reflect about your practice and more time to create those special partnerships that maybe if we were running against the clock, they would have been forgotten. And I think that's true about accessibility and about content. And I think these are all things that we should be taking in a very heavy suitcase as we approach post-pandemic days. Hallelujah. But, yeah, there's a lot to be taken from all of that kind of work we've done.
Yeah, that sounds like an amazing project, Emma. Congratulations on that. And it's so amazing to hear that those relationships have been maintained. And I definitely think from a marketing perspective, when you know, lockdown happened, and all of a sudden, because everything went online and went digital, there was this feeling that we've now got this global, this potential global audience. And that was really exciting in some ways. And, you know, we were doing online events and doing online resources for young people in lockdown. That was, you know, for quite a regionally based organization with something going national and international. But actually what I found, I think what people are realizing and what I've found now is it's the hyper locale that is actually amazing about, and you've seen it in communities where people have relied on their next door neighbor a lot more, but in with support with arts and culture, I just feel like actually there is going to be a refocus on the hyper locality of what, you know, of what we're doing. And I think it's important not to remember that, not to forget that. Sorry. So we've looked at sort of, digital and COVID now, and, outdoor spaces and, all those opportunities, Daisy, that you said that people have been doing, for a while. But hopefully we will one day return to venues. It would be good to kind of talk about how, marketing and audience development strategies, how artists can work with those departments and those areas within venues to kind of make their projects a success. Hey, Daisy, do you have any experience that you can speak to on that?
I think often, if it's a venue that I'm, working with for a long run, or we're only going to that venue, it's not part of a tour, for example, then I think a lot of the time I rely on the venue to just bring in the people that come and see every single show or most of the programme. And I spend a lot of time working with the venue on the messaging that we're going to put out there about, the artists that I'm working with, that will convince maybe a part of their audience that doesn't come as often, so maybe an LGBT audience, for example, and then I think I will always add in extra budget to, even if a venue's promised me X, Y, and Z, I will always add in a whole extra budget just for PR, messaging, video, everything that we can put out that's going to bring those people that maybe don't even come to that venue, but they're going to follow the artist. So I think a really clear example of this is when one of my companies, Pex Drag Kings, we bring our audience with us. Thanks, Coco. I see finger guns. Yes. And when we first started doing shows with The Yard, for example, who we now have a very strong relationship with, we were very clear in the sense of the people that are going to come to this show are probably not necessarily going to be people that have ever come to The Yard before, and certainly the data reflected that. Also, generally, the people that come to those shows aren't people that go to the theatre. So I think certainly the thing that we work really hard on is that really clear messaging around the show, and make sure that the venue is also on board with that, but then the venue's catering to the theatre side of it. That's what I want from the venue. I want the theatre to cater to the theatre, and we'll handle the rest. I feel like I've just waffled a bit there, but that's certainly how I think about it.
No, I think that is really useful that and also what you're saying at the beginning about how, you can rely on the venue to do what the venue does, but actually in terms of some of that audience development, you as an artist reserve some of your own budget because you know that for you that's an area of focus. I guess it's where, how much, where can we rely on venues to provide that support for audience development as well? I suppose it's making sure it's a shared priority in ways. Edda, do you have artists coming to you with those priorities? How much of a collaboration do you try to make it between artist and venue on audience development?
For me personally, it's all about the collaboration. I think it goes to what I was saying before. It's as an artist, you know who your audiences are and you know who's going to come and see your performance. So it's about making sure that you clearly communicate that to the marketing team at the venue, because, we have, the audiences who come, as Daisy was saying, who regularly come to the venue to watch what the venue programs. But then you as an artist have people who follow you around, who love coming to see the work that you do because they love your work. So it's also about kind of cross-referencing those audiences as well and kind of finding that cross-section. So for me, I love it when an artist sort of says, these are my audiences. These are people who will come to the venue. This is what I normally do to get the word out to these audiences. And then it's about me going, great, let's now build that into the marketing plan. So we will do that for those target audiences. And then these are the audiences that we think will also would love to come and see these shows. So then this is how we will target these audiences. And they're kind of merging those together and really collaborating with the artists and with the companies that we'll be working with, basically. Yeah, so that, I mean, for me personally, it's like absolutely collaboration, absolutely talking to one another and kind of continuing that conversation.
Yeah, definitely. And that understanding that when an artist is coming into your venue, like they're holding all that information and it's sort of, yeah, doing that in the most supportive and collaborative way. Emma, is there anything you want to add to that?
I think in terms of get in touch with the venue, I think from the word go, do your research in terms of what does that venue program, what are the venue's regular audiences, and does that suit your material? Do you actually want to go in and, you know, rock up a bit of kind of difference for this space if they're willing to do that? Or if, because I think lots of programs, previous programs, they're still on websites. You can still see what is in the theatre and you know which audiences, and I'm saying this very much inverted commas, you can take for granted. And that's true about venues and it's true about festivals, etc. But then you need to think, where is your audience within that? Lots of venues will offer you a marketing pack. Always read those through, see what you need to put in. And I think in terms exactly what Dave said, always never just assume that because you're going to that venue, you're going to sell out. Never assume that. And I think, Edda, tell me if I'm wrong, you can always call once a week, once a fortnight, depending on how soon you're going to be on, and just get updates from the marketing department and always say, well, how can we work on this together? Never come with accusations because it's not going to help. Again, it's not just audience development. It's relationship development with the venue. If it's work nice in 2021, you'll most probably be happily invited back in 2022. So, and that's not about you filling up spaces or not. It's about your humanity, your relationship, your passion about the work that you're bringing into the venue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also it's, you're talking about that selling out. Sometimes the aim isn't, you know, yes, selling out is great and selling all your tickets, but it's actually who is in those seats and who is experiencing that work. And I think, you know, from a marketing perspective, the way that I always talk about it with my colleagues who work on a much more community outreach role is, you know, I can do the numbers with marketing. I can, you know, go as big and as wide. We can do the PR campaign, but we need to be, you know, really consistent and really thorough in our community engagement and outreach to make sure that we're reaching the right people and that actually the people who are coming or engaging are who we want to and who we know will benefit most and enjoy it. So, yeah, I think that relationship is really important as well. And on the topic of venues, one difficulty for artists is that venues hold a lot of data for audiences. So I just wondered whether anyone had any suggestions for how this can kind of be addressed and, you know, can artists develop their own relationships with their audiences in their own way and how can that relationship between data and relationships really play out? Daisy, I'm going to send it to you.
I'm also just going to add on to what Emma said about don't fight the marketing department, like don't pick a fight with them. Go to them with ideas, I think is usually the best point of, first point of call. because maybe you're assuming that they're hitting a certain, you know, method or audience or, you know, whatever, and they might just not have done that because they were putting their resources into something else. So just like have a conversation about rerouting resources. In terms of data, I think, yes, very difficult, because a lot of the time, yeah, data can't be given over unless there's some form of agreement that also the audience is, you know, consenting to when they buy that ticket. And obviously, I mean, I'm not very well versed in them, but when I was in a venue about, you know, data collaboration agreements, but, I mean, that's something maybe to bring up at the start of your deal with the venue. Like, can we do this? Can we form this? And that will save you so much time on the back end. If not, then I think finding ways to steer your audience towards maybe signing up to your own newsletter or to your social media where you can then target them with that. I think with some of the artists that I work with who have a bigger following, we try and cover a lot of bases because not everyone wants to communicate in the same way. So we'll talk a little bit differently on our Facebook as opposed to our Instagram, as opposed to our newsletter. And we'll also only send out that newsletter when there's actually something to share as opposed to just sending out random messaging. And therefore it doesn't become annoying and it actually becomes like a meaningful relationship with that audience. For the first time last year during the pandemic, we conducted our first big like audience survey, and I think the only reason we were able to do that is because we'd spent a long time building all those communication paths with our audience members so that people were okay to answer the survey. But that survey's been so invaluable. Like we've put it, well, it's highlighted for us the areas that we need to do more of. It's also meant that we can put that data into our funding applications, and that I think is like, you know, that's why data is often collected, and it's also like so invaluable to independent artists to have that data, and it's often the thing that they don't always get to harvest from working with a venue. So I would definitely advise trying to have that conversation with the venue from the first off, and if you can't form some sort of agreement due to whatever regulation, then work steer your audience towards giving you some of their data as well.
Anna, go for it, sorry.
No, I think also keep it as easy as you can. QR codes are your friends. In terms of, because there was when I presented Bobby and Amy at Vault Festival, at the time Vault Festival also had an option of tick list if you're happy to share your information with the company. Lots of people don't tick boxes. I don't tick boxes when I buy stuff online, but some did. And luckily, out of this list of 12 people, two people also put in money to our Kickstarter to get to Edinburgh. So how lovely was that? But, of course, some websites have less flexibility. Some venues can't offer that personal offer. But I think if you are going to do something, if you've got somebody just with a QR code, normally I would say after they've engaged with the art, with the work, and it's an easy as just scan me and put in your email address, or it takes you kind of to which channel or platform you would like to stay in touch with the company. I think that would make it much easier because I've just sat down and hopefully enjoyed your work. So, you know, I think there's always that feeling for an audience member, if they've enjoyed it, they want to give something back there and then kind of thing. So I think that's a great opportunity to keep them with you on your journey.
Awesome, thanks. Edda, is there anything you want to ask, follow up on that with?
I think Daisy's got it right. It's making sure those conversations are had early on in the process, because it's hard to kind of go back to that. Some venues, because of their kind of privacy policies, they have a kind of flat out, no, we do not share data. But some venues are happy to, as long as you kind of have that conversation first. For us, you know, if you say, you know, we would love to capture some data, it's as Emma was saying, it's just a checkbox on the website. And then we can say, you know, would you like to explicitly hear from this particular company? And then once an audience has said yes, then absolutely we will give you that data. I would say it's also about kind of anonymized data as well, which can be really helpful. And a lot of marketing departments are happy to share that with you because the data is anonymous. So for that kind of data, you can get information like, you know, the age of a person or the age of the people coming to your shows. Even like the concession tickets, what kinds of tickets they booked. And even that can really help you kind of understand the type of audiences who are booking tickets. You know, how people booked your ticket. Did they use the website? Did they phone? That kind of data, because it's anonymous, the venues are happy to share that with you. So that can be really useful. And also post-show surveys as well. Again, some venues are happy to send out post-show surveys for you, or kind of can also include a little line in their post-show survey that says something like, you know, if you would like to sign up to the artist mailing list, this is how you can do so. So really, it's just about having that conversation early on and saying these are the types of things that we would like. Will you be happy to share that with us?
Yeah, that's really valuable to know. I think from that, it's just getting those conversations in early and thinking about marketing data, audience development as kind of part of those conversations. Thank you, panelists, for that. That was amazing. I'm really keen to move on to the questions, because we've had some really great ones in the chat. The first one actually just looks at, can someone explain the difference between marketing and PR? And Edda, I was wondering whether you could cover that.
So I think marketing is more about kind of getting the word out about maybe like a particular event or a particular project, and PR is more about kind of getting the word out. In my head, it's more like getting the word out about your brand and about the way that you're sort of perceived. Kind of what people see when they kind of hear your name, or what people see when they hear about your company. That's kind of how I would basically define it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's clear enough.
Yeah, I think also there's that more marketing is PR often relies on relationships with journalists and media and that involvement as well. And Daisy, you mentioned that you relied on PR in the past. Have you got a case study of a great experience with that that's useful to share?
Yeah, I think, for example, so I work with an artist called Katie Greenall, who has a show Fight Fat Fat, and the show is based around like fat activism and the fat acceptance movement. You know, when we first started working on her show, she was, you know, she knew, you know, some people knew of her, but she was a relatively unestablished artist as a solo artist. We knew that a year in advance, we knew that we were probably going to go to Edinburgh Fringe. So we started the PR campaign a year in advance. And that was just about getting like editorial, like think pieces, like things that people are like interested in reading and discussing, as opposed to trying to sell them a show or tell them about the process of a show, more about telling them about the essence of the work and the activism, as opposed to going, we're making a show, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't think the show was mentioned that much. So, and having quite a few of those pieces come out over the course of a year built a following in her social media, and therefore, like, you know, a year later when we were raising money, going to Edinburgh, etc., like, we already had a good established audience.
Yeah, build that relationship online. Yeah. The next question we have is, venues and companies can be very supportive, but sometimes with marketing we aren't systematic enough. Could marketing strategies be improved by venues and companies supporting each other through social media for mutual aid? For example, posting support Theatre Delhi, who then mention CPT, etc. Are there other mutually beneficial marketing tools that panelists have used before? Emma, you were talking about like the systematic nature of marketing and the kind of reliance on that. Have you seen any examples of work that kind of has been successful?
Sorry, I'm still thinking about PR. I think it's really interesting because you've got those PS swaps at the bottom of a newsletter of a venue. And I do sometimes, I think with when you use something like MailChimp, it's very easy to see how many people have clicked that link of something else that was from our friends at the bottom. And I think the people who, and I'm also speaking about my personal experience as a consumer of all these newsletters, if I pick that, I'm already like 70% gonna buy a ticket for that. I think you get your fans very quickly. That's just another reminder in that kind of marketing journey of seeing something three times and then being pestered three times and seeing a poster three times. I don't know the exact numbers of it, but there is the rule of nine. It's interesting. I think when independent artists contacted me and asked about how to get into those bigger newsletters like venues have, resources like Stamp. Like Stamp are writing down all the venues that are part of this collective. You already know that from this, you know, an acronym, they are supporting theatre makers and performers, if I've got the abbreviation correct. Yes, lovely. So you know that they are there already to chat about promoting your work, that even if it's not happening in their venue, there is something wider here. It's something about helping artists and supporting artists get the word out. So I think it's in that, again, it's about the research. It's finding out those collectives that are there to support artists' new work and building that relationship with them. And getting into conversations like this and seeing, because I know that from 2 p.m. today there's going to be reserving 5 to 10 minutes with venues, I believe, that are going to be in the market place. And it's just enrolling to those, getting to know the venues, writing down in your notebook who you spoke to, because these information, these connections of getting to know faces, for them to get to know yours, is about then, hi, Melanie, we spoke back then, I'm doing this show, I would love, love, love to be part of your newsletter because I feel that we share lots of the same audience and the same art form and interest, etc.
No, that's really helpful. I'm going to move on to the next question just because we've got a few and I'm keen to get as many covered as we can. The next was from, do any of the panelists have any experience working with community ambassadors? Daisy, I can see you nodding your head.
Yeah, so when we booked the tour for, I mean, I see a similar thing in the chat here about Louise Orin and her local ambassadors. We did a similar thing with Fat Fat Fat. We had our fat ambassadors, I don't think that's how we called them in our Arts Council, who were... We trained them, so we made sure that also we weren't just like going, promote this and here's no resources. Like we brought them all down to London for the day and we did training with them, which we were able to do because Katie has a participation and communities practice. I guess if your artist doesn't have that, then maybe bring someone else in to do that. And then we just have a WhatsApp chat and we just keep in touch with them every week about what they're doing, who they've met, you know. And the goal was never you must bring like 10 people with you when we come to your town. Like that was never the goal. It was more about the social impact of the show and what we could do to equip the local community with resources around this, like, activism, social messaging, etc. If they want to then come to the show, that's the added bonus. That wasn't the goal. So that was how we worked with them, and it was also about empowering them to then continue to lead their own projects after we'd finished. So it sort of had a legacy, and that was only going to be beneficial to us in the future, like leaving that legacy. But the legacy wasn't about us being at the forefront of it. It was about empowering local people in that work.
Yeah, I think you see that word around empowering local communities a lot, and I think that's the really important part of it, is giving the tools. Okay, so next question. What are the best first steps an emerging artist can take to build an embedded audience pre-project? Emma, do you want to take that one?
Sure. I think it's understanding, what do you do? What is your work and who you are making it for? I think when you make work and you see a room full of people that you had in mind when you started making this work, there is no bigger happiness than that. I think that is the magic happening. And I think of yourself, if it helps, sometimes helps me, think yourself as a building or a venue, and you are creating this work. So who is your audience? And then thinking about how to approach it. So for instance, if I go back to Press Play, I was thinking, okay, Bristol, Populé are a female identifying company, and they are also British and Latin American backgrounds. And I was thinking, sort of think about three things that make you and you special and your work exciting, especially for insert audiences here. And then once you've got that list of who you want to engage with that work, then you have to start opening up Facebook groups. And so with, for instance, Sugarcoat, which was a gig theatre, punk music, amazing show. It was just before the pandemic opened. We were at the Vaults. It was all about punk music. So for me, thinking how to develop that audience, one of the people we had in the cast was in a amazing punk band already. So that started from the casting, the thinking of how are you going to develop that audience, and then about how the flyers look. And then I'm now a member of all the groups of loud women and punk in London. And it's also expanding my wealth of information about that world. But also, once you're part of that world, you can see how it's breathing, where it's vibing, how to engage with them. So I just think it's all about the research and then getting yourself into these wonderful worlds that are available through social media.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you, Emma. We're just on the end of time, so I'm going to quickly wrap up and say thank you to Emma, Edda, Daisy. Thank you, Hattie and Canton's People's Theatre. Hattie's popped the Vaults marketing piece in the chat, so definitely check that out as a resource. And it just leaves me to say, thank you. I found that so useful, and I hope everyone else did. The next is at 11:30, there's where we're at talks with Soho Theatre, Brixton House and Warwick Arts Centre. So hope people enjoy that talk. Have a good day, everyone, and hope you found that all useful.
Well done, everybody. That was fab. I'm going to end the meeting in a moment, but I thought that was great, great content and really good actionable things for people to go away and do. So, yeah, very well done.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. Really enjoyed that. Such great insight. Hope you all enjoy your days.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Nice
have a lovely day.
Bye.
See you.
Bye. See ya.